were in business. You were talking about Gordon, and then you made some very nice remarks.
Yes, Tom Gordon would never let a kid go to school without shoes, and even though he was burned out, I can tell you that within the last 3 months, and Tom's only been buried now 30 days ago, and this is December, I was able to get him to give me a check for $200 to buy 25 pairs of shoes for a bunch of young black children learning the drum corps discipline here in Pittsburgh. There was never anything that Tom would turn you down for a decent cause, especially when it involved children. He subsequently moved his business to Bloomfield, and the same philosophy pervades that family.
You made the nice remark about Howard McKinney.
Yes, Howard McKinney was a sociology graduate of the University of Pittsburgh, dragged off to the war, and when he came back, he kept this Hill City concept going, which he had started initially utilizing the third floor of the Granada building on the Wiley Avenue side that was owned by the Stearns in later years, and where, incidentally, the Savoy was where the great bands of the 40s and the 50s came to play in Pittsburgh. But Hill City was basically supported by Fred McKee and the members of his very wealthy family who owned National Gasket Company. And my responsibility was to help raise the $43,000 a year to pay for a staff of five people, incidentally, four of whom became very well known in the community. Because of the indifference of the business community to help support Christmas lights and an annual parade that could feature support for Hill City, I was forced to first join forces with the Soho Community Center, which had lost its constituency completely, because down there on Fifth Avenue, they had the old bathhouse and no people, because all the kids in that area had moved away and were torn down for the Birmingham Bridge or whatever. But up on our side of the hill, up Kirkpatrick Street and the Center Avenue area, the area basically between Shenley High and the arena, we continued to have literally thousands of kids. As a consequence, I was forced to go to the community chest to get additional support. And the first condition that they put on it was the destruction of the child, the peer evaluation, the kids. They wanted that judge knocked out. They wanted the criminal justice concepts knocked out. They wanted the, they didn't care if the crime prevention club existed or not. And I couldn't persuade them that there hadn't been a single false fire alarm in the Hill District from 1938 to 1960, and that this concept of Hill City deserved to live. The first thing they wanted to do was to build a building. And so now if you go up on the hill, you'll find this Hill City building as a mecca for social workers. And I said to them at the time, don't make this building without creating a place where 20 people can sit down and break bread together, because we don't have another place in the hill between Shenley High and the arena where 20 people can sit down and have lunch. You, at one time, you could use the Center Avenue YMCA, and that was wiped out. It became a residence for blacks so that the blacks wouldn't insinuate on the whites' hotel services downtown. So when visiting bands came through that were not welcome at the William Penn or the old Fort Pitt or some of the other downtown hotels, the only place that the black musicians could stay was the Center Avenue Y. And of course the YMCA prided itself on having these special programs for black youngsters. Baloney. It was a horrible, horrible waste of community money. But they had the white establishment with their narrow-minded concepts, and so the, to this day, the YMCA gets tremendous support from the United Way, and barely touches kids. It's got the health center downtown. They claim to do things up in Beltshoover. They claim to do things in the hill. In the meantime, the crime rates don't budge a bit. Now they were smart enough to pick a black man to be their executive director, and now they can point with pride to look what we did. Well, baloney, they didn't do a damn thing to really relate to the community. So the board now builds this Hillhouse Youth Municipality building tied into the old remnants of the Irene Kaufman Center, where they kept the auditorium intact. And I said, the hell with it, I'm leaving, because the white Anglo-Saxon Protestant community took over this concept, went to the United Way to pay the bill. There was no involvement of the community. Now you'll find, if you go to Hill City House, you'll find the Visiting Nurses Association, you'll find all kinds of social workers, but you won't find any kids.
What the year was this?
This is now being even to this back.
I know that.
Back
the
into
year
the 70s.
Left. Yeah, the year you left.
Oh, I left. I left. I left when the Hill City built the new building sometime in the around 70 or 71,
mm-hmm.
because it was obvious that Alan Berkman and Walter Limbaugh, the two Jewish men that I invited to this board, were about to succumb to the Sewickley women that controlled the board of the Soho Community Center, and they had the voice of the people in the United Way downtown, and that wasn't what we were designed to do. So basically, then you find that the kids were left adrift. Irene Kaufman Settlement never could get anywhere with these kids. The crime prevention clubs were destroyed, and we went back to having another neighborhood. Holocaust, like all the other neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm.
It was just sad because the Hill City concept was so wholesome and so meaningful. The highest achievement was that one of Ralph Bunch's assistants, a fellow by the name of Knox, came out of Hill City. So we know that we did some good. We know that a lot of our kids went on to college and went on to raise families, went on to do a lot of good things. And to this day, I run into men who are in their 60s who are reminded of the fact that they benefited from this Hill City experience. So from my standpoint, it was an extremely thrilling time, and we accomplished a great deal. It was just a shame that it was allowed to die, because the contemporary social work philosophy is, go by the book, don't make any waves, don't ruffle any feathers, just go by the book. You go to sociology classes at the University of Pittsburgh, and on page 109, it tells you how to do this and do that. But imagination, that's for the person who builds pieces of sculpture, that's not for social workers. You can tell I have a very low...
Say that again.
You'll tell that I have a very low regard for social workers. I love it. The key is that you have to... My distrust for social workers is very simple. Historically, they have been trained on page 116 that they're supposed to make the decisions for the people. As you can hear, my basic philosophy of life all the way back to the beginning was one of self-help. That you give a person a chance, you give them an opportunity, you give a black man a job, then give him an education, and he'll do everything that whitey will do. But if you go to the old concepts that historically came out of Africa and out of the Deep South, that these are animals and that they don't have any human characteristics, it's totally false.
Yeah, but the social
everybody's blood is red.
How do social workers keep them subservient?
Very simple, because they control the purse strings. Mm-hmm. And the classic example is the Hill City experience. They control the purse strings, and they manage to structure every situation in which they are found to the point where they establish the rules.
Right.
They create the framework in which you operate. And even as I worked in the, I'm a life trustee at the Jewish Community Center, as I watched them operate, even as I organized this symphony orchestra, which I'll tell you about in a few minutes, they want to do the thinking for you. I don't want that. because as you heard me say, that my father taught me with his 1 year of schooling in Europe, as long as a man can read and make his own decision, he's not at the behest of a priest or a rabbi or a social worker or some other parlor. You're free when you can read and make your own decisions. Social workers want the comfort of the cocoon. This is the type of person that goes into this.
Exactly.
The type of person that goes into social work wants the comfort in the Jewish tradition of 38 days of vacation. 38 days that they don't work at all, mm-hmm. plus their time off for their earned vacations. I am just so disheartened by the fact that they could do so much good. Jane Addams in Chicago taught them, and then Ulinsky taught them, let people organize themselves to do something for themselves. The concept even of the whole welfare system is so askew because the welfare donors are making sure that these people stay subservient.
I wish there was some way that do-gooder public, of which you're a part and I have been a part, who have not been well served by social workers, somehow that message would get through.
Well, the key is to make the social worker themselves understand that the greatest contribution they can make to our society is to force the public to think for itself and to do for itself. The concept of Crime Watch is teaching our society this fundamental truism that there's no solution that is accomplished by guns and police. That the solution must come from the people in the neighborhood being alert to what's happening to their next door neighbor. If we could just get this whole philosophy permeating our country, here you've got George Bush with his tremendous economic background, with a father that was a distinguished senator, wasting away in the White House because he can't understand that his 1,000 points of light is somebody else's language, that he doesn't permit the society to help solve its own problems. You don't throw money at problems, you involve people in solutions. This is the tragedy of the times here in the 90s, and no different than in the 80s and in the 70s, in the period in which I'm talking. That there was not an awareness on the part of the educated social worker that their whole function was what Ulinsky taught and Jane Addams taught, that to organize these people to face their problems, discuss them, and let people come up with solutions. It would go so much faster. We wouldn't have to rely on politicians. We wouldn't have to rely on fictitious political leaders that we could be doing for ourselves. And this is what was so exciting about Harris Wofford, a man who comes in with a concept of self-help generated by the Peace Corps. The fact is that we were so completely misunderstood what Jimmy Carter stood for. The fact is that we have placed such a tremendous emphasis on the almighty dollar being the measuring device by which we evaluate people and the, quote, success, close quote. Success is a process of mutual support, understanding, and respect of one human for another. Religion doesn't necessarily contribute to that. Social workers don't contribute to that. Politicians don't contribute to that. And so many times we're not aware of the importance of our own feelings in our own capacity to solve our own problems.
But operationally, one has to get it. This is, you know, homilies and preaching won't do it, Bill. And a social worker has a certain function in our society.
But unfortunately, it is a self-aggrandizement that has come into control. And the tragedy that I witnessed in the 60s and the 70s and the 80s was the fact that the whole society emulated the businessman. The businessman went off to play golf 3 times a week. And the doctor who spent his life trying to become educated decided that the measuring device of his success was not to take off one day for the preservation of his health, but he wasn't meaningful in his milieu unless he could take off 2 days. In the case of the college professor, his measuring device was not having to meet students, that he could go off and do research. that he didn't have the commitment to training, convening freshmen and sophomores and undergraduate to start to study the process of how to become educated. This was the thrilling thing about going to Harvard Law School for me, that we had to construct from day one the basic Socratic method of taking an idea and building on it by the introduction of experience. In the case of a family, when you sat around and discussed what the rights were of the teenagers, the concept was that everybody had to have some feeling. You weren't a parent by right, you were a parent by sufferance. That if a kid wanted to respect you because A, your experience, B, your age, 3, your knowledge, they would respond to what you tried to give them a chance to learn. You don't teach anybody anything in this world. People have to want to learn. This is the basic philosophy behind learning how to read. This is the basic philosophy behind the whole, should be the basic philosophy behind the whole educational system. It's taking us generation after generation to learn this simple truism that people learn because they want to, not because you teach them something.
Well, somehow operationally it has to become possible, either from teachers or from social workers.
Or from any of the other organized facets of our society, right, including doctors and lawyers. The concept of a doctor taking off 3 days a week because he's got a machine that can do his functions for him, mm-hmm, is great from his financial standpoint, mm-hmm, but it sure doesn't do anything for the patient, and it doesn't do anything to enrich the society. But when you measure your success by how much money you have or how much you can give to charity, you've lost me. Because this isn't the measuring device. The measuring device has to be, what can you give? And this was the exciting thing about understanding the fundamentals of Judaism, that the feelings that I had about you first and then me apparently existed initially in the Judaic experience.
Including the approach to making sure that somebody, the highest charity being...
That being unknown.
And also making sure the guy could make a living.
That's the important thing. And this is what was so great about the Christian charities that I contribute to, whose number is legion, because when they spoke to me about teaching a man how to fish,
mm-hmm, that's right,
instead of giving him a fish, you gave him a pole. Mm-hmm. You gave him a string. You gave him the things that he...
That was Maimonides who said that.
Is that really? Yes. This is exciting when I found out how many great things he had to say.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that if you give a person a chance to...
Teach them
do for themselves. Teach them how to fish.
That's Maimonides in the 11th century.
It's exciting to see the fight going on in 1991 about the right of a hunter to go out and kill a deer.
I want to get something very personal from you. You can duck this entirely. You've had a lot of trouble with your wife due to this social, your
difference in background.
That in regard to both the religion and with respect to how you react to this
sociology
of the times.
Let me tell you what the problem there. We're married 52 years, and everybody gives her credit because she has put up with my mishigas. My craziness started at age 12 when I had 5 businesses of my own. I had earned $100. It's now 1929. And did I tell you this story before, that my father said I had to buy Westinghouse Air Freight stock? I don't want Westinghouse. We've got to do it. The man at the bank says it's good. I got wiped out in the crash in 1929. Lost my $100. From that point, and a lot of other reasons, I thought that most adults were stupid. They worked to 65 and died at 66. What did they get? I was, by God, I was going to work till I was 50 and go spend the rest of my life doing acts of human kindness. Many years later, I found out that this is the engraved imperative,
yes,
of the 614 mitzvah.
That's right.
So this was, again, the exciting part about the intellectual meaning of Judaism,
mm-hmm,
and why I've always been thrilled about being a Jew. It was the fact that in Swissville, back there, were no Jewish kids in the school. That didn't bother me. The disappointing part was that there was nobody that I could throw my arms around.
Mm-hmm.
I was a middle child, and, mm-hmm, and my parents were constantly engrossed in their own problems, and so that my childhood could well have been thought to be, in some respects, unpleasant. But when I look back on it and realize how much I accomplished in having created 5 businesses and made all this money, I satisfied society's expectations of what an adult should do. I found out later, so what? The point was that as a consequence, the accumulation of money to me was always...
How did this play out with Olga?
It played out with the fact that she was basically raised as what you would call a normal Jewish girl who was all of the things that she went to Northwestern, her father was a doctor, they could afford this, she didn't have to take a student card at school or live on a budget and so forth. So that she had to put up with a significant difference in philosophy. Although, strangely enough, her father was a Daniel de Leon socialist who, after he had done his medical work and he worked 24 hours a day, he would run to an intellectual experience at the Labor Lyceum on Miller Street, which still exists as a black church. So that we had a rapport at that level because he had the social philosophy at the turn of the century of Daniel de Leon, who was a philosophical democratic socialist. But that was not what his wife expected of him.
But neither is Olga.
No, Olga is the quintessential upper middle class, beautiful Jewish woman whose friends have a tremendous regard for her common sense, her good taste, and her joie de vivre. So we live in 2 different worlds, basically, because I don't want to live in this world, I want to live in a little bit better world. So when we went for family counseling, I suppose maybe 15 years ago, when my kids began to get nervous, they didn't realize that under no circumstances was I allowed to prevent his family to break apart. The first thing the counselor said to Olga was, Olga, he's on cloud 9. You might get him down to cloud 7, but you're never going to get him down to earth, so just forget it. Well, she hasn't forgotten it. She still works on it. But I would, and then there's a painting out here in the hall called Cloud 9 that one of Polly Michaels made. And Polly Michaels and Olga went to the first grade together, and a lovely human being was next door. And I bought that painting. Olga got mad as hell. Why are you buying this painting? I said, that's the story of my life, and you don't even recognize it. So this is the story of our life that she's had to put up with, the intensity with which I quit working at 55 instead of 50. Not to be the richest man in the cemetery, and to have the opportunity to do those things that made a better world.
Well, what year did you quit?
Let me tell you about my kids.
What year did you quit?
1972. So yes. It'll be 20 years next month.
Mm-hmm.
So in the meantime, I'm so busy, I don't look at that desk. You can see what a mess I'm in, because I still have about 200 things I want to do.
You started to say something else.
I started to tell you about the luck that I had with my children, because both of my children ended up developing an educational program in which they had to do something for someone else. So that the manifestation of this philosophy, thank goodness, was carried to my kids. My older daughter took a speech therapy degree at Syracuse, and Sally then came to Pittsburgh and took a special ed degree in order to be a special ed teacher. She had a marvelous story when she was an undergraduate. She had a kid that was in a Catholic school in Syracuse, New York, that was stuttering, and she was able to clarify that problem as a junior in college. And then when she came to Pittsburgh for her master's degree, she went out to, part of her system, she worked for the county system out beyond the airport, and she had a young man that stuttered in English and not in French, because he came from a town called Bulger, which is out behind, on the way to Burgettstown, where after World War I, hundreds of young couples moved there. When they brought back their French war brides, they brought them to this area around McDonald to Burgettstown. And this kid had a parent that spoke French, and he stuttered in English, but not in French. So Sally was able to correct that problem. She had the wonderful story of a kid that came out of the home for, he was incarcerated in a youth center out there, and the kid eventually went off to the service as a result of Sally having had an impact on his personal life. It was exciting. Glory graduated from Duquesne and went into the home healthcare business at Montefiore Hospital, and both of my children were raised colorblind, so that Glory had no fear of going into the Hill District and servicing the needs of the home healthcare program.
Mm-hmm.
Lori is down in Florida now in the travel business. Now, my...
Does Olga do any social work?
My God, yes. She's been the chair. She was the treasurer for Ladies Hospital Aid. She's on the board of directors of Ladies Hospital Aid at Montefiore. She's been a life trustee at the Sisterhood at Brother Cholum. She helps, works for National Council of Jewish Women. She's got a distinguished career of helping in the community. Steps back now because of the generation. Yet, in 1991's campaign, her problem was to help develop the Snowbirds' level of giving. For the one of the organizations, for Ladies Hospital Aid, she's on the phone this week with young ladies that are not renewing their membership, and so she continues to do fundraising and to do all the other things that we both agree on.
It's just what irritates her most about you. Your anti-religion sometimes expression, or anti-people, like you get mad at certain individuals. What irritates her the most about you? Your remarks about the religion, or your remarks about people?
I don't know that. What irritates me, I suppose.
What irritates her?
Oh, the fact that I won't conform. That I'm just such a violent person, because every time I see something that's unjust, I write a letter to the editor. I have one.
I saw that letter last week.
Yeah, well, she's just mad as hell about that.
Yeah.
When you look at that, she says, why did you have to insult the mayor?
Yeah.
I said, well, somebody has to speak up to the fact that what the mayor is doing is stealing $4 million in tax money without giving us a law.
I saw that letter.
Did you understand it?
Sure.
You understood what I was trying to say?
Yeah, I know.
Did it make sense?
Yeah, it made sense.
Okay.
I didn't agree with it, but I made
sense.
Well,
let me ask you, should we be forced to buy the water system back when we already own it?
No.
Then why do you not agree?
Well, there's a
turn it off on the drum corps. I'm going to take 300 kids off the street next summer and train them in drum corps. And we had a meeting last week with the county parks department, and they're satisfied to swipe from various budgets in the county, including the county housing authority, monies that will support the 300 kids that we want to take off the street to teach them and to teach them drum corps. When you teach drum corps, you make fantastic musicians.
I know. Who are you going to meet with?
I'm going to meet with Joseph Sabina Mystic to try to get the city to give me a little bit of support outside the budget, because I know that they can't do it.
I was going to ask
and they can take it. They can pay for the insurance out of the Parks and Recreation budget, or they can get the insurance is $16,000 for these 300 kids. Now, they can also let us practice we can also rehearse at the Shenley Oval, because there's a food program that feeds kids down by the Panther Hollow noon of every day in the summer. You can get down there and get a free box lunch. I'm talking about you as a citizen, or me as a citizen, but it's designed for kids. So if we can get 300 kids off the street doing drum corps, come on in. The concept now of the drum corps that the county sees for being so important is that we can take kids out of county housing projects, and if we can get them from Duquesne and Clareton and cities outside the city, we can give these kids reason to become proficient as musicians have a significant impact on the drug control problem. They immediately see this. All the politicians see the drum corps taking 300 kids off the street as the best antidote for drugs that they can possibly conceive of.
Those who are willing to go into that.
Well, that's the point. Well, we can recruit all we want, especially if they're going to get free food. Because remember, most of these kids don't get to eat. In the school system, they can be served all winter long, but when the summer comes, what are they supposed to do to eat? The parents don't have money, and so they starve. But if they can come into a program like this, they can be fed lunch at least.
A wonderful child would like to do something else besides being
a drum corps. Oh, we have in the City Parks Department an incredible program involving creative arts. We have in the City Parks Department a situation where maybe 75 or 80 kids are hired to pick up the leaves and cut grass. There are many, many things for kids to do. the concept of drum corps is to sweep up and give them uniforms. Boy, if you give a young black a uniform, that's the happiest day in the world. I say young black because it's obvious that it's a pair of shoes or a pair of pants that they otherwise don't have. When you talk about people living in the project who have subsidized rent and the mother's off on drugs or whatever and the limited resources don't include shoes. And this is what made Tom Gordon so great. It doesn't include food. It doesn't include taking care of the kids. You're seeing now so many examples of abuse of children, which I've known about for 50 years. Because the best thing to do is to kill them, then you don't have to feed them. I mean, that's a rather crude way of putting it, but the child abuse programs that have been known to the ghetto for years and years and years. You see the West Side Story concept where mama's crying because the kid's involved with a gang, but you don't see the other side of the coin where mama can't feed them. So they have this opportunity to get into trouble.
Let's go to another...
Let's go to Big Brothers.
Let's go to Big Brothers.
Big Brothers is a cute story because having been in the industrial laundry business, I was able to provide uniform services to a company called Donaldson's Motor Company over on Western Avenue on the north side. And what happened was Kenny Ross came to Pittsburgh because he was arrested in South Philadelphia for shooting crap with his partner.